and our Redeemer. Amen. So my family spends a lot of time at the town pool over the summer. And I have to tell you one place I detest at the town pool. Maybe my kids can help me out. Do you know where I dislike at the town pool? The snack bar. And I dislike the snack bar because that snack bar sits there with the ice cream treats and the candy and the fried foods, just begging children to beg their parents. Mom, can I have? Mom, can I have? I want an ice cream. I want this. I want that. Right? And I get so tired of it. How often do I say yes? Not very often. Right? I get so tired of saying no to the stupid snack bar. But yesterday we were at the pool and my husband wanted french fries. We got french fries, this big plate of french fries, and the kids also, we had dinner there, right?
Yeah, so they got chicken nuggets.
And we had this big plate of french fries. And then the decision is, how do you share the big plate of french fries? You have one giant plate of french fries and four people who want french fries. Now, I have to say that I've never had a problem sharing french fries because I don't like french fries all that much. So it was no big deal if somebody got an extra fry or two and they got passed around and I only got a couple. I don't mind sharing my french fries. But had it been something else, if I'm going to be completely honest, there are things I do mind sharing. So for instance, we go out to eat. This may be hypothetical, might be real, you can decide. We go out to eat and we're going to order dessert. My husband says, oh, he's not here to defend himself today, so don't tell him. And I might say, oh, I'll get dessert. And he says, oh, no, no, I don't want anything. I'm not hungry. Now, do any of you have a spouse or family member like this? And then all of a sudden, his fork is in my plate, right? Eating half of my dessert. And I have to say, on those occasions, I am not as gracious as I was with the french fries. I have been known to shove the fork away and say, get your own dessert, right? Sometimes there are those things we want that are harder to share, that we really like, that we want to hold on to. Which is why this story today about Abram sharing this land, this beautiful, lush land, is really an amazing story. A story of someone who believed so greatly in the gifts and promises of God that he would take basically what was the dud land for all of his animals. He shared. The story of Abraham and Lot is one that people don't often tell. It's not a very exciting story. We hear, and maybe you've heard of Abram and Lot, because there are other stories about them in the Bible. Abram is considered the beginning of the nation of Israel. He's promised by God land and descendants as many as the stars. And at the beginning of his story, God tells him this, and then God says, now go out. I'll lead you out. You go. We'll find this land that you're headed into. And so Abram gathers everything he has up, and he takes with him his nephew, Lot. Now, we don't know exactly why he takes Lot. Some people have said it's because he didn't have children of his own, and Lot kind of filled that spot. We don't know, but for whatever reason, he and Lot both go off together. And as they're going off at this point in the story, they've accumulated so much. They have all of this livestock. They have all of these things. And what has started to happen? What often happens when we accumulate? People start to fight, right? And so they started fighting, the hired hands, it says, over stuff, over where the sheep were going to graze, where the goats were going to graze, who was going to get the best areas. And finally, Abram says, you know what, Lot? Enough. We should not be fighting. We're family. This is silly. We're going to go our separate ways. So, you decide. You pick the left, I'll go right. You pick the right, I'll go left. Again, doesn't seem like a big deal, but it was. Because Abram was the elder. He was the one who should have been able to decide. And yet he left this choice up to his nephew. And as Lot looked out, Lot saw in one direction a lush green valley, and he's thinking, oh yeah, that's where I want my cattle and sheep to be. Meanwhile, Abram got the other side, which was not so attractive. How is Abram able to do this? Why does this story even matter? Because Abram is able to look out, not at the green valley, and say, oh yes, God's promise is about to come true. I have faith in God because I am headed into this beautiful, lush place. Abram is able to look out at a desert, a desolate place where he doesn't see life, and looking out at that, he is able to say, yeah, I believe in God's promise. I don't know how it's going to happen, but somehow God is going to keep his promise. And isn't that faith? Faith isn't looking out over the beautiful stuff and saying, oh, God is so good. That's thanksgiving to God, but that's easy, isn't it? Faith is looking out in a place where we don't know what's going to happen and we can't see life and still believing that God is there and God will make a way and God is going to keep God's promises. That is faith. Now, Abram was not always so good at this and will not always be so good at it in the future. In fact, many people put the story that's right before this together with this story as kind of the antithesis of what Abram does here. Because in the previous story, Abram and Lot had been out wandering. They had to leave where they had settled because there was a famine. And they go into Egypt. And they go into Egypt, and Abram's thinking, oh, I don't know about this. And he says to his wife, you know what? You are so beautiful, and I don't think things are going to go well there for us. So when we go there, you tell the Pharaoh that you're my sister, not my wife, so that the Pharaoh can have his way with you. So they do that. They go into Egypt, and Sarah says she's Abram's sister, and Pharaoh takes her in as his wife. Because Abram didn't believe, right? Abram thought, I have to take this into my own hands. I don't know what God is thinking here, but I'm going to take care of this. God's not going to take care of me here. I am, so I need to take care of this with my wife. And he did something that greatly displeased God. In fact, this displeased God so much that plagues were sent on Pharaoh's house because of it. And finally, Pharaoh's like, take this woman. You lied to me. She's not your sister. She's your wife. This was not an act of faith by Abram. And there were consequences, right? Things that happened because he was living in a scared, controlling way with his life, not believing the promises of God. And then right on the heels of that comes this story. It's as if he's learned, oh yeah, God does keep God's promises, so I can take that hand, even though I don't know what's going to happen. That's the kind of faith I want. It's the kind of faith that I find so hard to hold on to, though. Because if I'm honest, there are times that I look out at things I don't understand and that scare me, and I can't see a way forward. And so I close in on myself, and I try to control things in a way that aren't mine to control. And if I'm honest, I'm not always as generous as I could or should be with my money and my time and my spirit, because I don't necessarily believe in the gifts that God has given me or the way that God will increase those gifts. And yet God is constantly calling us to that faith, because living in that faith will give us freedom. When we can believe that God is with us, when we can believe that God will make a place out of the desert, then we can live in generosity of spirit and time and stuff. And that is what God promises us. You may not be able to see a way. All you may see in front of you is desert. But know this, God has promised a way. It might not be on your time schedule. It might not gasp be something you can control, which is usually our biggest problem, right? But it is there, and it is beautiful. God is present.
And God will and can work through us to bring beautiful things into the world. Where we see nothing, God often sees possibility.
One of my colleagues just went on a mission trip to Guatemala, and she went to this mission that was started by a man, a priest from Minnesota, actually. And he went down there, and he saw the poverty that people were living in. And he said, you know, this is horrible, but I can do something about it. He believed in himself and the gifts that he had been given, and he started down there a fair-trade coffee plantation. He's employing women to do sewing work with local fabrics down there. He started a school where other people would go down and see only abject poverty. He saw possibility. Now, I'm not saying God is calling you to move to Guatemala. There are these very same things all around us, in our lives, every day, in the relationships we form, in the communities we live in. There are places that are crying out for us to share our gifts and be a part of. We have been gifted by God. We have been promised God's presence and goodness. And we are called to share it. Now, perhaps the best news of this story, though, is that when we have the courage and when we don't, God is still there. God was with Abram when he messed up with Sarah. And he was with Abram when he stood on that mountain and made the right choice in being generous towards Lot. And again, Abram's going to screw up in a little bit because Sarah's told she'll have a baby, and they laugh at God and say, she's a little old for that, God. That's not going to happen. And then he has a baby with his maid instead.
He stops trusting God once more,
but God is still there. And God continues to keep God's promise. So this isn't about whether God is with you or not. This is about how you feel and how you live, because doesn't it feel better to be generous? Doesn't it feel better to be open-handed? Think about that. How often we find ourselves closed up, it doesn't feel good.
I was thinking in my life if I've ever regretted
being stingy, and I never have. Now, kids, don't take that to mean we're getting treats at the snack bar every weekend. But I gotta keep track. So here's me being in control again, right? And I was thinking about this. I was thinking about how my grandparents love being grandparents so much. Because they can just be generous, right? You let go of the control. You want the third cookie? Have the 30th cookie. I don't care. It's good, right? At least that's the way your grandparents are, right? Most grandparents are.
And I think it's because of that. It's a letting go of that control. It's a being able to be generous with our time and our things.
And that is what we are all called to. Yes, we need order and control and health and all of those things in our life. But the reality is we are in control of such a little piece of what actually goes on. So we can choose to close up and hold on, or we can choose to open up and let God. I say look out into that desert and ask God, what are you doing here, God? I don't know. I can't tell. But I know it will be good. So let me be a part of it. That is what God calls us to. May we all